Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Football at 4. Here's The Drive with Tyler Columbus and D-Mac.
Sean Drocher in for D-Mac today. Tyler Columbus is here. I want to advise you of some breaking news that is not football related. A police are investigating a shooting in Old Town, Arvada. One officer is down and they are searching for a suspect. They request that you steer clear of that area as it is an active situation. A press conference will be scheduled for this afternoon. We'll keep you updated as more information becomes available. But in Old Town, Arvada, please steer clear from the active situation there that the police need to take care of. So I want to let you know about that so you can make sure that you can give them the room to let them do their jobs.
For sure.
So we'll head back to football at 4. And a lot has been made in this offseason about the offseason. Right, Tyler?
Yes, of course.
I know that sounds kind of strange, but what are we concerned about? We were concerned about people getting hurt in the offseason because they weren't at the facility. How people spend
their
time.
That happened to two of our guys, by the way. How many guys in the NFL got hurt away from the facility during the boycott? Did we have 100% of them? Did we have all two of them?
You got the only one that got waived and is filing a grievance. That's
no,
for
they
sure.
both got waived, right? Who was the other one? Deshaun Hamilton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, they were going to try to trade him for something.
Right.
Know what that was
good luck
be,
on that one.
Yeah, anyway. The concern, of course, is, you know, quarterbacks, 50-50 battle. What do they do in their time off? And how much does that really matter, right? Are we talking like Paxton Lynch level of on your day off? It can't be that bad, right?
Well, you think back on the Trevor Siemian Paxton Lynch battle.
Right.
And when they were going into, I guess it was the summer break right now, I think, or maybe it was after the season, but there was a ton of conversation around which one of these guys is going to organize the passing camp. You know, neither one of them organized the passing camp. Neither one of them are an alpha, and neither one of them wants to take the leadership reins, all those sorts of things, right? Well, it's a weird situation to be in when you know that you're in a 50-50 battle. Yeah, you want to take the reins. Yes, you want to become the natural leader that you are. No, you don't need anybody's permission to be a leader. But you're also trying to be respectful of your peer, right? And you're trying to not step on anybody's toes. I don't think that there's going to be a passing camp at all during this period because it usually happens before OTAs, not after OTAs. But if there were to be something, it would be interesting to see, do they both try to do it? Do they both do they work together? Do they organize it together? Stuff like that. I mean, I don't think much is going to be accomplished between now and training camp between these two guys, so I'm not going to be overanalyzing anything. Matter of fact, I don't expect anything out of
it. I mean, would it be bad if one of the guys, let's say, just hypothetically, one of them says, let's go out, I'm going to do it, come join me for the passing camp. Like you said, it seemed a little presumptive. Would that cause any sort of friction in a locker room, do you think, if you don't know who the starter is, but one of the guys says, hey, let's all go work out? Is that really a bad thing?
Well, no, it's definitely not a bad thing. I mean, if you want to take a leadership role, take a leadership role. And if you're comfortable doing that, you should do it. It's just more, it creates a little bit of awkwardness between the two guys. However, I guess you probably shouldn't really care if it creates awkwardness. I mean, if you're trying to be the dude, be the dude.
Well, Drew Locke and Teddy Bridgewater spoke specifically about what they're going to do on their spare time.
I'll, you know, maybe take a little bit of time, relax a couple days, and then get right back to it. But my plan stays the same, momentum and routine and schedule that I had during this off season, it's going to be the same. I've just decided that, you know, I'm going to put the head down and keep grinding until this season's completely over. This is my job. This is my life. And, you know, I want it to be for a very long time, and I want this city and this team to be successful, and that won't come without work.
All right. And here is Teddy Bridgewater.
Yeah, I mean, I come up with the plan. I usually go back to South Florida and fly a couple of the guys wherever I am. And we'll work that way. Who doesn't love South Florida? You know what I mean? The beaches and all that stuff. But I'll see, you know, once these next 2 days go by. And Jordan and I, we talk. And he's actually in Florida sometimes, some days also. So he and I will get together for sure this offseason, within these 5 weeks in Peru. And, you know, it'll be fun, man. Whenever you can get around the guys, and it's not always football, you know, it creates and forms that bond and that camaraderie. So I'm looking forward to these 5 weeks of working and you know, getting the guys together and having some fun.
Who did he say to be getting together with?
Drew Locke. It's a Drew.
Oh, Drew.
So your idea of would they do it together?
Interesting.
I know it sounds like maybe Teddy Bridgewater's taking the lead, but including Drew Lock.
You know, Drew Lock caught a lot of heat this offseason when he more or less admitted that he didn't really know how to work in his first couple years in the NFL.
Which I really appreciated that candor. Yeah. I think that self-awareness is healthy.
I mean, for sure it's healthy. You want to get better at things that you're not good at. And if you didn't have the type of work ethic previously, then yeah, you got to fix it. Of course, it's a little bit concerning as well. Like, you're starting quarterback in the NFL. Why did you not have it? You know, Drew didn't have the benefit of having someone to truly learn from. Like Joe Flacco, he wasn't sitting there teaching anything, right? He didn't have a Peyton Manning. He didn't have even a Teddy Bridgewater to learn, like, hey, these are the habits of being an NFL quarterback. Now, it's really not an excuse, because I do think that it doesn't take long when you're in an NFL building to figure out the way that you're supposed to work. And so if you can't figure that out on your own, well, there's probably something wrong. But I've got no issues with there being a learning curve there for Drew Lock. And I do think that had he been around a little bit of a better veteran to teach him, just really like these are the ins and outs. This is when we come to the building in the off season. This is how we handle our study habits. That always helps. I know that I had guys that I learned from. I know that I learned how to study the game from the veterans. It's not like you just walk into the building and you know these things. You need somebody to kind of hold your hand sometimes and teach you. Not necessarily, like, work ethic is not the right word. If you've got work ethic, you're willing to show up to work. But how to work, the best way to get things done, how to study film, what is the best way to go about that, stuff like that.
Process, yeah. Habits,
right?
That sort of stuff. Well, Vic Fangio had his own suggestions for the two quarterbacks and his preferred way they spend their time.
To get themselves in the best physical shape they can get themselves in. You know, obviously they need to be throwing. They don't want to take a month off from throwing. They got to build their arm strength to where when they come into camp, it's not like the first day of throwing in a month. So it's twofold. Then study the playbook. They got the iPad. They'll be able to watch anything and everything we want to give them. So it's some study, a lot of work on getting in tremendous shape, and then make sure your arm's ready to go.
Just that simple? You surprised by any of that?
Well, there's not a whole lot to be done during this period. This is a relatively short window in which you just accomplished the entirety of the offseason. Now you've got roughly a five-week window where you go home, and I know my routine was I would take the first 10 days and I would do nothing. I mean, seriously, I wouldn't work out. I wouldn't do football drills. I would go home and I would take a walk at night with my wife and the dog or whatever it might be, but I really wasn't staying in shape. And then you take a week or two to sort of slowly start building back into it. And then you really take the last couple days before training camp and you kind of go back into vacation mode because you're like, well, it's my last chance to sit down and binge watch a couple shows. There's just not much time to accomplish much right now. So all you really can do is stay in shape, make sure that the arm is strong. I do think that for a quarterback, it's important that you keep just the volume on your arm, because when you come into training camp, if you haven't been throwing 50, 60 passes a day, well, that's going to wear you out really quickly.
Right. And that does make a tremendous amount of sense. But you look at the way the people look at it, like the fans look at it, and they think, well, this is the same thing with the field day last week. 100% of your mind should be on football 100% of the time. I've never met an athlete.
Were you anti-field day?
No, pro.
No, you were pro-field day.
I because I've never met an athlete who was successful that did not take occasional mental breaks.
Of course. It's like anything else in life. I mean, when you grind and grind and grind, you do have to hit a point where, yeah, you step away.
You're human, you'll burn out.
And you reset yourself a little bit. Now, I'm not going to sit here and act like the NFL offseason is that big of a grind. It's not. Did they need to have a field day at the end of OTAs, at the end of minicamp? No, they very easily could have finished up with a walkthrough. But for me, it's not about like the reward or needing the mental break. It's about truly evaluating, what did they miss? They missed a walkthrough. And actually, what is going to benefit your team more? I could easily make the argument that the team bonding and the chemistry Absolutely. That's going to come from field day was more important than going out there for a 25-minute, 50% walkthrough.
He's Tyler Palumbus. I'm Sean Drocher. And we're talking about Broncos offseason. And there's been a name on this team that hasn't been floated around about one of the impact players that the Denver Broncos have. I'll tell you who it is next.
Does your company make safety a top priority? Alliance Safety, Colorado's premier supplier of safety equipment, is here to help make it one. As an authorized distributor of 3M safety products and home to all pro gear, Alliance has a vast inventory of personal protective equipment designed to keep your workers safe, including fall protection, safety glasses, protective gloves, and gas detection solutions. Visit AllianceSafetyInc.net. Call 303-388-8766 or stop by the Alliance Safety Warehouse off I-70 and Tower today to lock up all your safety needs.
It's The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Here's Tyler Palumbus and T-Mac.
Tyler Palumbus is here.
I mean, that's the person you do that for me, right? Let's be honest.
They're here for you, buddy.
No, they are most certainly not. D-Mac is off today. My name's Sean Drotar, normally host of The Fan Late Night, but in here today with Tyler. The first time we've ever gotten to do a show. This has been fun so far.
Yeah, no doubt. Good to have you on board, pal.
Yeah, the Broncos, as they go into this season, the quarterback competition is obviously going to be dominating all of it. But whoever wins that job, that impacts a lot of different players. I mean, it impacts the way offensive linemen block. You know that it's different. Drew Lock has a tendency to break containment earlier than Teddy Bridgewater, who more is a guy that shuffles within the pocket. So it changes that effect. It certainly changes the way receivers work. We've heard that Judy and Bridgewater sync up pretty well in the early stages of this, at least. But there's a player on the Broncos roster that should be a huge part of it. First round draft pick. And he performed maybe better than people think. It's Noah Fant. He finished with 673 yards. That was good for sixth among all tight ends and only 51 yards away from being third. But three touchdowns, which for the top tight ends, that's on the low side.
Yeah, that's an interesting year because you'd look at Noah Fant and you'd say, okay, the yardage is fantastic. Matter of fact, I think it's all fantastic. I really don't have any beef with it. I'm not going to look at it and nitpick and be like, well, man, you only had three touchdowns. You didn't have a good year. Noah Fant is, he plays a position in which I don't know that people fully understand how challenging it is for the people that cover the Noah Fants of the world. So, you know, the game's kind of changed and you've had different phases of the NFL where there's certain mismatches that everybody tries to exploit. The current mismatch of the NFL, the current trend is that you try to get a wide receiver type of body that plays the tight end position. Then you line them up on the line of scrimmage and they run the same type of speed of a Jerry Jeudy, but now they're getting lined up against the Josie Jewels of the world.
Right.
And you've got an inside linebacker who's trying to cover the tight ends. We, as a team, have historically struggled covering tight ends for the last 5 or 6 years. But I'm telling you, this is an NFL problem, not a Denver Broncos problem. We are not unique in our struggles that we have in covering tight ends. It is the biggest mismatch in the entire game right now. So I'm glad that we've got Noah Fant. He's good. He's reliable. I don't know that Noah Fant has got... See, he's just kind of sneaky. Like he gets his passes. He catches the majority of them. We don't have any real issues with him. Is he a playmaker? Is he the type of guy that's going to take a catch and bust loose three or four tackles and turn it into an extra 25 yards gain that wasn't supposed to be there? Well, I think there's a certain element of toughness in Noah Fant's game that has probably been missing in the first couple of years in the NFL, but there's so many good things that you say, man, if you could just step it up just a little bit, you're probably going to become that guy. Here's the question with Noah Fant, and I'll ask you this. Is Noah Fant straight line fast, or is he athletic?
I think he's more straight line fast.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's the part of his game that is missing right now a little bit. That's okay. I mean, you can still be a great player and you can still have a great NFL career when you're just a drag racer, right? When you can go fast in a straight line, that's fine. But you're probably never going to be the type of guy that is going to turn a simple 12-yard out into a 45-yard just dynamic play because you're out there making moves after the ball is caught, right?
Right. And that's really what the Broncos expected when they drafted him. That he was supposed to be that kind of guy. And he, look, it's still a work in progress. This is still a guy he's 23. I mean, it's not like he's a wily vet just yet. He's 23 years old. But when you talk about the idea of the big plays, it's true. Out of 62 catches, 8 of them went 20 or more. Now, for tight ends, that's a little again on the short side, but not by that much. And out of his 673 yards, 372 of them came after the catch. So, I mean, there is some athleticism there. It's just, I think we may be accustomed to the Kelseys and the Kittles and the Wallers of the world of just these dominant players. But you brought that up earlier that right now in the NFL, there is no answer for Travis Kelce or George Kittle. It doesn't exist. You simply cannot stop them. You're just trying to keep them from destroying your team.
Yeah. Well, see, Noah Fant will always be compared to the spot that he was drafted, and that's not his fault, nor is that necessarily fair to him, nor should he even really care about that. But he was drafted in the first round, and so when you're drafted in the first round as a tight end, there are always going to be expectations, and the expectation is that you're going to play like a Travis Kelce. That's what the expectation is. So you look at Travis Kelce's first couple of years in the NFL, and you would say, actually, they were relatively comparable to what Noah Fant has been able to do.
They were.
Travis Kelce's first couple of years, he got 862 yards in receiving, 875, and he had five touchdowns in both of those years. Okay, slightly better than what Noah Fant has had in just about every category, but I mean slightly. It's not drastically better, but where he's at today, now that's the type of level that you need Noah Fant to get to if he's ever going to be worth the first round selection in which you really took him. Travis Kelce had 11 touchdowns last year, right? That's the part of Noah Fant's game that is missing right now. Are you turning those yards into points? And can you turn a 15-yard out route down there in the red zone into a touchdown because you got one missed tackle? That's the next level for Noah Fant, is that he's got to start turning it into points.
Yeah, and I think imagine Kelce's heart. I mean, you're talking about, in Kelce's case, he was second in the league in receiving. Not among tight ends, overall. Stephon Diggs, number one. Kelce, number two.
Are you talking about his rookie year? This year.
Idea of a fan blossoming into that kind of player.
Correct.
Boy, that's a high bar.
It is, especially when you've got a Jerry Jeudy and when you've got a Cortland Sutton. Now, Travis Kelce's got that. He's got plenty of playmakers around him. He finds a way to get it done.
Yeah. Some of what gets it done is number 15.
For sure.
Patrick Mahomes is throwing them the ball. That's part of it, too.
Yeah, when you've got a quarterback that can extend plays and go back there and roll around for 10 seconds and wait for guys to open up, that's always going to help you get touchdowns. Sure.
So for the Broncos in that regard, is that one of the reasons you would say, hey, maybe they should go with Drew Lock? More mobile. He could maybe extend the play. Got a slightly stronger arm. If you wanted to take advantage of Fant's skill set, which is the better quarterback?
For Noah Fant, I don't know that either one of them really impacts Noah Fant. I don't know that either one of them really impacts any of our receivers, quite frankly.
Any of them at all? Nothing? Well, even Jeudy and Bridgewater hooking up?
Well, why? Oh, now, that's an interesting one, actually. Jerry, you could make an argument that Jerry Jeudy would benefit the most from Teddy Bridgewater.
Route-based guy.
Drew Lock is probably more dialed in with Cortland Sutton, and he's probably got his opinion made, his mind made up that Cortland's his guy. Whereas Teddy Bridgewater might be, he's a little bit more fresh. He's had a great offseason with Jerry Jeudy. He might look at Jerry Jeudy like he's the number one.
We know that for a while now. The Broncos have been trying to keep their relationship with Peyton Manning going, including he announced their schedule, he made some funny videos, he talked to Drew Lock a little bit. Could it be more? And if it could be more, could his brother be the guy that made the template? We'll talk about that next.
You're listening to The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Here's Tyler Columbus and D-Mac.
Is awful, Sean Gross. I'm normally the Fan late night. You can tell because the voice is different. Tyler Columbus is still
very
here,
smooth, very silky.
By the way, speaking of smooth and silky, that would be Tyler and D-Mac swings, or so I've heard.
Oof.
No, not so much. Well, anyway,
you know, it's get that out.
Yeah, Michelob Ultra presents the Fans Match Challenge, powered by Cobank Colorado Open. It benefits the first tee, the Green Valley Ranch. That first tee at Green Valley Ranch does great stuff. With kids, they introduce kids to golf, get them a little bit of confidence. It's a really, really good program. I've worked with them a little bit, too. They're fantastic. So if you would like to participate, go to denverfan.com/match and donate. But pick your favorite show.
On behalf of the drive.
Right.
On behalf of the drive. So when you go donate, make sure that you specifically designate the drive. Because we know that we're your favorite show. Sean's your second favorite show.
And you also need mulligans.
And we definitely need the mulligan.
Because the show gets the most. Yeah.
I got to tell you, man.
Freebies.
So I have been so bad at golf this year to the point where, like, my wife has got this, like, newfound obsession with golf. And it's been awesome because she's picked up a new hobby and she's enjoying it. She's wanted to play all the time. And I've, like, not wanted to play because just every time I've gone out, it's just been terrible. And I had my dad, who is 76 years old and has been a scratch golfer his entire life. I had him give me a little lesson this weekend. And, dude, I don't know what the heck happened, but I had the best nine holes of my entire life this weekend, which you know what that means. Now I'm going to show up for the match thinking that I'm playing good, and it's going to go right back to me shooting like a 95. Yeah.
Well, and they get the mulligans for these guys. You can do that at DenverFan.com/match. Donate to the drive. Help the kids out at First Tee Green, Valley Ranch. I ended up playing, I played golf with my dad yesterday.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Father's
my
Day?
My dad will turn 75 in about 2 weeks.
Awesome.
And, he smoked me.
Yeah.
Straight up. You know, and it, yeah, I think.
My dad's
you hit that certain point and it must be nerves, right? He's in his 70s and he's just hits the drives. They're straight, bang. And of course I'm hitting and it's spinning off to the side. I'm hitting houses and trees. And
no, I mean, I'm convinced that,
golf carts,
if my dad, ace. If we're all blessed enough that my dad will be around when he's like 96, he will still be beating me at golf at 96 years old. And there's no question about it. He's just silky smooth. He's just got it. Dude, he got me so dialed in that I went from like last week, I'm like a 15, 16 handicap type of guy, like good enough to go out there and have a little bit of fun, definitely bad enough to be terrible on the wrong day, right? I shot a 92 like last week, and then he got me dialed in. Dude, I shot 2 over in 9 holes.
Whoa.
I've never in my life done something like that. Never in my entire life. And so I went out today, tried to hit a few balls. Couldn't find it. No, it wasn't there. Yeah, just was not there. So, we'll see which Tyler shows up.
I have tremendous respect for you right there, saying it's 16 handicap, which, by the way, is actually, you know, good for normal humans in general. I mean, I'm not even close to that. But good for you, because I am convinced. I've talked about this on Late Night. Everybody lies. You hear about that. Everybody, you ever go out, right, and you get some random person. And, of course, that person's chunking it everywhere, but they're like, well, I'm normally a 4, but just not having it today.
Oh,
like,
no.
Yeah, right.
I'm definitely
everybody,
normally a hack.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah.
I think if I calculated, it'd be like 23. I'm happy they let me on the course. But that's what I've kind of figured out. People come on and talk about, they're just lying.
Their handicap. I actually get accused of the opposite of that because, you know, when you're like a 15, that means that
you're sandbagging.
If you turn it on, you can play pretty
good.
Right, you
can play pretty well. Right.
And you could shoot 8, 9 over if you've got a good round.
You can also put up a 110.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And so I get accused all the time in these tournaments that I play in, like the member guest or whatever, of sandbagging, because if you've got a 15 handicap, like, you're pretty lethal in a tournament like that because you get a lot of pops, you know?
Right.
And if you turn it on the right holes, that's very advantageous. Yes.
Yeah. I commend you. Most people don't do that. You run into it and everyone says they have this amazing handicap, but they just happen to play trash around me.
Right.
Maybe I'm just a lousy playing partner. Maybe it is me.
Maybe we just get so nervous around you.
Yeah, I'm sure that happens. Let's see. What would that be? How would that even happen? How would I make people nervous?
I don't know, man. I'm a little nervous doing a show with you today, man. It's
great.
Like I got the legendary Sean Drotar.
I wouldn't go that far. But the idea that Peyton Manning could join the Broncos in some capacity has been pretty exciting, right? Well, what would you like to see him do?
Open-ended? Just that's the question.
If he was working with the Broncos, what role would you like to see him in? If he were to take a spot with the Broncos.
If Peyton were to take a spot.
What would you like?
Well, I don't think Peyton is involved with the Denver Broncos unless it's got either a level of ownership or whether it's got a level of comfort with the next owner that he feels like he is running the show. So Peyton Manning's not going to come around and be answering to somebody. That's not what he's going to do. He's never going to become some just GM that could be fired by the president of football operations in any normal situation. So what would I like him to do? Peyton Manning probably, as rich as he is, he doesn't have the type of money that it's going to take to become some sort of majority owner in a football team.
Ridiculous the amount of money that's required. I mean, even when you've made as much as Peyton Manning, it doesn't even make a dent.
Yeah, I mean, he's not even in the ballpark.
In the billions of dollars now.
Yeah, so I mean, could he be an owner of an NFL team? Sure, he could be a part of a group of owners. He could put together, or he could even spearhead an ownership group that maybe gets a little bit more equity out of it because he spearheaded it.
Like Derek Jeter did with the Marlins.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
Yeah.
You're the face of it. You get a control, but you're not all the money behind it.
I mean, I'll say this. NFL teams do not become available very often for ownership level, right? And so what the Broncos are going through right now, it's actually pretty dang unique. If you're ever going to have an opportunity to get Peyton Manning involved, you've got a very unique window right now with this ownership drama that's going on in which you actually might be able to get him to come back because there's only a couple of teams every 10 years that ever come up for ownership sale, and we've got a situation right now that potentially he could get involved.
Yeah, and Eli Manning joined the Giants, got back with the Giants. He's now there. Basically, he's in charge of fan engagement initiatives and business operations, which is sort of a rather vague. In other words, get fans interested.
So he's kind of like...
Peyton already kind of does that.
He's kind of like the John Elway of the Giants now. He's got a very high-paying job that you're not entirely sure what the acting job currently is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just would like...
I like that job.
Like to keep your name attached to the organization for marketing purposes.
I want to get one of those jobs.
That sounds like a great job.
You know what my goal as a player always was? I wanted to get a GM fired. That was my goal. Is there a GM out there that is dumb enough to pay me? Seriously, overpay me. I'll be the bust. I'll be the dude that gets you fired. I don't care. I just couldn't find a sucker that was dumb enough to get himself fired by paying me.
Oh, okay. So you wanted to be like the Ian Desmond.
Absolutely.
Okay.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ian Desmond, that's $78 million.
I mean, there's some dumb GMs out there. I couldn't find one dumb enough.
Oh. Yeah, they get smarter all the time now. It's kind of frustrating for a guy like you, I guess.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound that bad. I love it. Wanted to get a GM fired.
Yeah.
Did you ever tell one of them that?
No, but.
Did they know deep down? Did deep down they know?
Oh, they knew.
You wanted them out.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I just wanted to be overpaid like the rest of the slappies, That's all I wanted. I was. I mean,
in the big picture,
I was overpaid.
Yeah. It's the American
dream. I just wasn't overpaid in comparison to my peers.
Who would ever say they don't want to be overpaid? They want to be overpaid. I mean, come on, let's be honest here. Well, the Broncos would like to get some wins this year, and they'd like to get them the way that they drew it up. And that means their two guys are back. What can Bradley Chubb and Von Miller do together? We'll talk about it next.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive. Here's Tyler Palumbus and D-Mac.
It is The Drive. Tyler Palumbus is here. I'm Sean Drotar for D-Mac today. Normally those to The Fan late night. I'm out in the sunshine. It's weird.
Man, you do all right, the sun?
Not really.
Vampire hours.
Yeah, exactly.
Give me an example of a day in the life. Like, what does it look like? Show ends. What happens after the show? What time do you go to bed? What time do you wake up? What happens the rest of the normal waking hours?
Well, it depends. If I'm going to be writing something for DenverFan.com, recap the Rockies and put a team report.
Which is almost every night.
I have to do that, so I have to write that out. And then, you have a little performance energy left, right?
Sure.
I don't just keel over and go to sleep.
Yes.
So then you go down and find something to binge watch or something like that, catch up on a show, and then hopefully you're tired at that point. And then maybe around 3:30, just kind of rolling to bed.
3:30, 4 o'clock every day. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, roughly.
Then what time are you up? What time do you wake up?
Like 10.
All right. You still get a few hours in there.
Yeah, it's fine.
My problem is it doesn't matter what time I go to bed. I'm just waking up early. That's just.
Oh, see, that never happens.
Well, number one, I'm in the right time slot. I got a dog. I got a wife and I got, I just wake up. That's just what my body does.
Yeah, I think my very patient wife has gotten used to that lifestyle where we only overlap for a few hours a day.
Oh, that would probably
naturally.
That probably makes things better, doesn't it?
It probably does for her.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would think. Yeah. Just minimal exposure probably is best. it's fun. But actually, I mean, I like night because guess what happens at night?
What's that?
The games.
Games. Yeah. You always get the fresh reaction.
Exactly.
For sure.
So that's the part that's a lot of fun. So I do like doing that. We're going to have Mike Klisch join us in a little bit. But the idea that Von Miller and Bradley Chubb could be healthy, we saw what happened very briefly when they were finally together in 2018, right? 26 sacks together. Now, can they do that again? Is Von Miller, are you worried about the age? Are you worried about the injuries for Bradley Chubb?
Yeah, there's no way that Von Miller and Bradley Chubb are considered an elite pass rushing duo at this point of their careers.
Really?
Are they good? Yeah, they're good. Are they going to be in the upper echelon? For sure. But, I mean, let's talk about realistic expectations. Well, Bradley Chubb is coming off another surgery. He's been banged up his entire career. He's had one really, really good year of football. And last year I would classify as – like, good. It was good.
Me too.
He was a Pro Bowler.
I know he made the Pro Bowl, but he had one fewer sack than Von Miller had the year prior. Uh-huh. Everyone was trying to run Von Miller out of town because he was done with his 8.5. Chubb gets 7.5. He makes the Pro Bowl.
Don't get me wrong. I mean, 7.5 sacks is a good year for an average pass rusher. It's just not an elite year for a guy that you drafted. What, he was number 5, right?
Overall.
I mean, for a guy that you drafted 5th overall, that's not an elite production.
He also didn't even lead his team in sacks.
Well, there you go. Did. Right, right. So, I mean, if you break it down realistically, well, what are you really expecting out of these guys? I would say if you got 9 sacks out of Von Miller this year, I would be like, hey, man, he's still producing. I mean, in the twilight years of his career, if you get 9-plus sacks, that's a good year. Now, people will probably knock it, and they'll probably destroy it, and they'll be like, he's making way too much money for that type of contribution to the team. But you know what? Sometimes you get paid off of your past performance. And if you got 9 sacks or more out of Vaughn, I'd feel like that's a good year. Bradley Chubb, for it to be considered a good year, I think he needs to get 10-plus, right?
I was thinking the same thing. The bar has to be higher for Chubb.
It has to. For sure it does. I mean, he's younger. He's 5th overall, but he's coming off all the injuries and everything. So I guess realistically what I'm saying is that, I think...
You don't think the pair gets to 20?
Do I think they get to 20?
At 26.5 the last time they were healthy. Do you think they get to 20?
Who is Von Miller going to be? Who really knows, right? I mean, you remember last year in training camp, the way that Von Miller looked? He was terrorizing people.
Oh, yeah.
He looked absolutely like a man possessed. Looked like the Von Miller of the old. It's all going to come down to who he is. Because if Von Miller's playing at a high level, Bradley Chubb's life is going to get easier. Because Bradley Chubb's is going to get singled up more than he was previously. And life will just be a little bit easier to get sacks. I guess I would say, no, I don't think the 20 is... I don't think they'll get there. I think if that's achievable, I'm certainly not going to be shocked if they get there. But if I had to bet on it, I would take the under right now.
Yeah, the idea that, you know, they basically average double digits each, that it does feel like a bit of a stretch. But you look at the defensive line. Draymond Jones had 6.5. He's almost, I look at him as being, him and Shelby Harris as being more key to how those guys are going to get sacks. Because if they can be impactful, then that you draw another guy off, giving them a little bit of room to operate. To me, Jones is one of the guys that really is going to make this go.
Yeah, that helps. I mean, your interior pass rushers usually are not the guys that are really going to be the key to the engine. It's always going to be the guys on the edge. So, you know, I put it on Vaughn, and that's fair. He's highly paid, and that's reasonable for it to be on him.
Our Broncos insider, Mike Klisch, joins us, courtesy of the Bet River Sportsbook. 9 News Broncos insider. Follow him on Twitter, at Mike Klisch. How are you doing today, Mike?
I'm doing great. We had our Father's Day today on account of everybody was working yesterday, and it's been a great day. A little ball in the yard, played some Kliss, which is the same thing as horse, except a little quicker to get everybody out. Mm. And steaks are on the grill. We're ready to roll.
I could think of a few analogies to go along with that, Mike. Interesting one. Mm. Okay. All right. How'd you do? I mean, how many letters did you get?
You know, this guy in front of me kept hitting the long shots, the three-pointers. I don't have the strength anymore for that. So I was out early.
How was field day, Mike? Who's our field day champion?
Speaking of field day?
Yeah.
The Caden Stearns won the home run derby. And so I was a little surprised by that. The fifth round safety upset Garrett Bowles. I heard a bunch of guys were putting balls out up halfway up the berm. So there were quite a few sluggers on the team, but Caden Stearns is the guy who won it. And then everybody saw Drew Locke win the three-point contest. I'm not sure about the chipping contest.
Man, Drew is smooth from downtown, isn't he? Holy cow.
Yeah. Those were like, you know, they had the three-point arc there, but it looked like he was shooting free throws. You know, he was just kind of set, rhythm, and you know, spin, no problem. Yeah, he was really good.
Mike, yesterday you wrote about the Broncos' other quarterback, Teddy Bridgewater. You had a story about that over on 9news.com. And give folks an idea of the sort of nature of Teddy Bridgewater, that sort of cheery nature. What does he bring that's a little bit different?
He's, I think the big thing with Teddy Bridgewater, you know, this competition is the first time that Drew Locke is going through a little bit of adversity, right? I mean, he's always been the guy. Even last year, he was the guy. Teddy Bridgewater, after that injury in 2016, a week before the start of the season, he basically missed 2 years. When it happened, you know, they had some life and death maneuvers, you know, medical training maneuvers. They thought the dislocation severed not only the ACL, which it did, but they were also worried a little bit about an artery. It turned out that wasn't the case, luckily. Put in an air cast, but it wasn't your typical torn ACL. There was a dislocated knee at the same time, and it was difficult for him to come back. He basically missed 2 years. And then he went to the Jets for a minute and was traded to the Saints and played just one game there. And then went 5-0, 4 years later. And when he went 5-0, Kennard McGuire was able to get him that big contract. It was roughly, 23 million a year from the Carolina Panthers. So he's really started, he's been a 2 year starter in 2015, the second season with the Vikings, and then 2020 with the Panthers. So he's a young 28. He said because of that injury and all the doubt that was surrounding it, that he just comes to work and smiles every day.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a competition for the starting quarterback. He's been through worse. You know, releases and trades, and he's got that right attitude about it all. A guy who's been through quite a bit.
Mike, according to the majority of media reports, we had one day that Drew Locke won the quarterback competition and Teddy Bridgewater won the rest of them. Did you get a vibe for what was going on the days the media was not there, though? I mean, what was going on the rest of the days?
Yeah, I had it. I had Drew Locke with two. No one could have had Teddy Bridgewater winning the first day. You just can't give that first day to him. He missed so many throws. It looked like it was his first practice, and you know, that's the way he performed. Locke won that one, and then Locke won Tuesday, this past Tuesday in the mini camp. But besides, yeah, there's some intangibles with Teddy Bridgewater. You know, the way he interacts with teammates, you know, with the receivers. What are you seeing, you know, the tight ends and the slot receivers, what are you seeing on those option routes? Why did you go that way and not this way? You know, he'll go up to Judy, needs you to cut, you know, whatever it is that he tells him, cut a little later, cut a little sooner. And besides that, he interacts with the defensive guys because he wants to know, you know, what they see from him, tendencies that they see from him. You saw that I was going to roll out that time? How'd you know? So he's always trying to pick brains out there. It's kind of a visible leadership, as I call it. And I think that's another reason why he's got a leg up on Drew Locke. It's just he's been around, and it's a young offense otherwise for the most part. You know, Bobby Massey will up the age a little bit, but, you know, Fant's still young. Even Sutton's still young. Judy. You got Javonte Williams as a rookie running back now. I think Teddy Bridgewater's maturity and experience might, right now anyway, and there's a long way to go, like 97% to go, Teddy looks like he's got a slight lead.
Yeah, Mike, you went exactly where I wanted to go. Last one for you. We're talking about all of this, but Vic Fangio said it was 2 to 3% of the evaluation process. Is that a bit of an exaggeration?
Probably, but I mean, it was a point he was trying to make there that you know, it is about the performance in the training camp, and it's really going to be about the performance in the preseason. I mean, I think everybody's going to be able to pick the winner. You know, the guy sitting on his couch watching the Vikings game and watching the Seattle game is going to be able to maybe pick who the winner was, just like we did a few years ago. Paxton Lynch and Trevor Siemian. It was really obvious to everyone that Trevor Siemian won that one. The year before, Siemian and Sanchez and Lynch. And I think it'll come down to something like that also. It will be the preseason, move the ball in training camp. But at the same time, first impressions matter more than 2 to 3%. I think they're going to have, an idea who the leader in the clubhouse is right now.
Well, Mike, thanks for the time today. Enjoy your Father's Day. Good luck with the Kliss match. Thanks for the time.
Yeah. You got it. They just pulled out. I just got a new lawnmower.
Yeah. Nice. Have fun with that bad boy.
All right. See you guys.
Have a good one. Thanks. Mike Kliss. Brought to you by Bet Rivers Sportsbook. And the first impressions do matter.
Yeah.
I mean, they really do. That's a good point. And, you know, Fangio said 2 to 3%. We looked at it, and it was said to a certain extent, as Mike put it. He was making a point that there's a long way to go, but certainly what we saw in minicamp was more than 2 to 3% of what they're going to decide on.
Well, the point is that, yeah, training camp matters more. It matters way more than OTAs mattered, and what you do in those preseason games is going to matter even more than that. So, sure, the biggest weighted portion of the evaluation, that's upcoming. It hasn't happened just yet. But, man, you can't tell me that before this competition ever began, it was probably It was more than halfway over before the competition ever began. When they brought Teddy Bridgewater into town, I'm sure that they already had if you wanted to call it 60-40 on day one or 55-45, whatever you want to call it, they had an opinion that was probably halfway over before OTAs even started.
Yeah, you have to think so. That's why you bring a guy in. By the way, you're listening to KKFN, KKFN HD1, Longmont, Denver.
Nailed it.
My name is Matt Foley, and I am a motivational speaker.
Take that thing.
Coming to 5 o'clock, major news.
Somewhere out there, well, in Corpus Christi, DMAC is proud of you for the way that you just pushed those buttons. Oh, no, see,
how much you bitch?
Nugget
Motive.
My name is Matt Foley.
That's kind of predictive. I know. I like it. And I am a motivational speaker.
Bang the button.
Yeah. Everybody likes to hit the red button.
Yeah. There's like 16 of them. That's a blast.
Right.
See, when I come in, that thing's gone.
Yeah.
It's not even there. They don't leave it for me.
Oh, they don't let me touch it either. Yeah. I've got a cord over here that, in theory, I would have the power to do that, but they've never allowed me to actually touch the iPad.
He's not here. Do you want me to grab it for you?
No, I mean, Richie's watching. Richie sees everything, and he'll probably tell D-Mac that I touched his iPad, and then we're going to have problems when D-Mac gets back if I touch his iPad. That's your iPad? Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's an iPad. Wafer thin. You can just hand it over. You can get all the buttons you want.
I can't touch that iPad. I'm not allowed to.
Just do it!
Major news in sports that it's so seismic, it's hard to understand how impactful this is going to be on college sports. The Supreme Court today had a unanimous decision providing the situation for players. It didn't directly address the name, image, and likeness that you've been hearing about. But basically what this does is it gives colleges the opportunity to start paying players to work in different compensation. It basically makes it a free market, just as Brett Kavanaugh wrote in that decision. The NCAA is not above the law. The NCAA couches its arguments for not paying student athletes in innocuous labels, but the labels cannot disguise the reality. The NCAA's business model would be flatly illegal in almost any other industry in America. End quote.
Yeah.
That's pretty cut and dry.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you think about it, of course it would be. You know, this has been a long time coming, and this isn't even going to change things overnight, and it's pretty cloudy. It's pretty confusing on what direction we're going to head in. I don't know how this answers things, but I do know this is a step in the right direction, and over time, we will eventually get to the right place. Where we were previously was not the right place. You know, we could argue now that we're at the point where it's out there. Yes, you can and you will be paying these players eventually. It's out there now. Now the argument becomes not should college athletes be paid, but the argument now is how.
Yeah, how?
How should they be paid? In what manner should they be paid? Should they all be paid the same amount? Should they be paid proportionally to the position and the value that they bring to their organization? All those sorts of things. Should freshmen be paid the same as seniors? You know, it's going to be confusing, and I don't know that there is an easy answer to this, but I know that previously it was wrong. It was wrong that you could have a name that somebody else could benefit from, but you could not. That's wrong. That's as the Supreme Court decided that should be illegal in most areas. Okay, good. We're heading in the right direction. Now it's going to become very challenging because you're going to have big schools that are going to have all kinds of money. And if you just say, okay, the schools are able to pay a salary to these players, well, of course they're going to be able to pay more money than lower tiered schools are going to be able to pay. And then you're going to get schools that are now going to be just stacking the roster full of talent because they can pay more money than a smaller school could, even though a kid would play more. And maybe in the long run, it'd be more beneficial for him if he goes to the lower school simply because he could get paid more to be a backup at the SEC or in the Big 12 or whatever it might be. So it's going to get complicated, Sean. I'm not a very smart dude. I've got a couple ideas of how I would run things if I was on a board or if I had any sort of vote, which I don't. But I'm curious your thoughts on what's the best manner now to go ahead and compensate these athletes.
Well, that really is tough because you talk about the idea of maybe standardizing something, but it was very clear in this ruling that you can't do that. They addressed that as well in a later part of the ruling that basically that this is going to be the Wild West.
Yeah.
Go after whatever you want. And so you are opening something of a Pandora's box. Now, I think it's for the right reasons. I'm with you. I believe that players should be compensated for their work. Look, I remember going up to the Boulder CU bookstore, right?
Sure.
And they had football jerseys in there, and they had some numbers on it, but no names. I knew which one was Eric Bieniemy's,
yeah,
and which one was Darian Higgins,
of course.
And I know those guys didn't make a penny.
Of course.
And they're just selling them right there. And then that's the way the NCAA's been doing that forever. And you know, after those players leave, all of a sudden, those jersey numbers are not the ones up for sale, right? I mean,
right.
They're making it off these players. They've been doing it forever. I'm happy to see that the players start to be able to get compensation for it. But I am worried that the schools with $100 million athletic budgets like Ohio State or Texas or a school that has a lot of financial backing like Oregon from Nike,
yeah,
may just go ahead and just blow everyone out of the water.
Well, you got the big time donors, you got the big time boosters, you're going to have the big time money.
T-Boone Pickens at Oklahoma State.
Sure.
All of a sudden, a school like that.
So here's why I think that you should not just pay a salary to these players. Well, you could come up with like a minimum that you're going to pay the freshmen, that you're going to pay the sophomores, and maybe that even has some escalators in it as you get older. I don't know. But I don't think that the right thing is going to be say, hey, University of Colorado, you can pay whatever kid you want, millions of dollars. There's no there's no closed end to this conversation. You can pay whatever you want. I think what the right thing probably is going to be is you find some middle ground where you say, okay, yeah, there will be some sort of quote unquote salary that maybe the kids are making $50,000 a year. Maybe it's $100,000 a year. I don't know. Maybe it's more than that. Seriously, what kind of value are these kids even really bringing to their program and the sport and the school that they play at? Of course, the value is going to be different, but where you could really make a difference is you say, okay, we're going to try to make the salaries look pretty similar so that the schools with the money, they can't go out of their way to just have some booster pay millions and millions of dollars. But then you say, okay, yeah, you've got your salary, but now what you have is you've got the rights to your name. You've got the rights to the Columbus name. You've got the rights to the Drotar name. And if you've got the ability to go out and sell yourself, go for it. Good luck. I mean, that's, you've got the ability to now go pick up whatever endorsements you want to pick up. If Nike wants to pick you up, good. You've got Nike. If the local car dealership wants to pick you up, great. Good for you. But you're going to now get paid based off of your name value and what you can provide to other companies and advertising and sponsorships and all kinds of revenue. And it's not going to end up being the same because my value as a backup right guard, of course I would never be able to say, sell my name at the same level that you could for your starting quarterback. That's not going to work out.
Right.
But the salaries or whatever you want to call it from the university, it's going to look similar. It's just what you make off the field that's going to look radically different.
Yeah, and it's going to be hard because these schools are not going to be, the next step is you're not going to be able to say in the SEC, here's our minimums, because now you're colluding again. Basically, it turns each of these universities into their own little business. Now, if they want to pair up into their conferences, that's fine. But that's where it gets really interesting to me because talking through it, it reminds me a little bit of how the Major League Baseball draft tends to work, where the best player is not always the first pick because signability matters in baseball because these guys go back to college or some of them are a really big prospect name and they would like
to go
play a lot
football?
Of money.
Is he going to go do something
else?
Right.
And so in the baseball draft, the best player doesn't always go to the first pick because that they decide, I don't think we're going to be able to sign him. Player goes down to 5, 6, 7, wherever. It ends up being shuffled, not because of talent level, but because of basically money and interest in the organization. Somebody gets drafted by the Diamondbacks and he's like, I don't really want to play for the Diamondbacks.
Sure. I think I'll go to school next year.
Right. They'll go to school and come back in the draft next year and see if it's different. So I think that's probably how it's going to look at first. Where, you know, one of the star quarterbacks coming out of college may have his eye, or coming out of high school may have his eye on one place. And it turns out that, well, okay, maybe this other university would like to pay me more. Well, now I'm interested. It depends on the player. You may want to have a shorter line to a starting quarterback thinking there's more money and of course more visibility, or you might just look at it and say, it doesn't matter because this is the school I wanted to go to. We don't know how this is going to take shape.
Well, no, and it's going to take a while before we're getting to the point where players are truly getting paid like this. Like, that's not what today was really about. Today was more if they're going to find, I guess, more or less an appropriate livable wage for these student athletes where they get the educational tuition, they get living expenses, they just get a little bit more than what they previously got. So today's the opening of the box of saying, okay, where could this really head in the future? And I think where this really goes, when Pandora's box is really going to get opened up, it's going to be when some conference has got enough nerve and enough guts to say, you know what? I don't need you, NCAA. I don't need you. We are the SEC. We are the Big 12. And we are powerful enough to be our own entity. And we don't need to be governed by you. As a matter of fact, now that we have separated, if we want to hire an 18-year-old kid and if we want to pay them millions of dollars, that's our right as a business. We are now a business that is operating on our own away from the NCAAs. And that's when Pandora's box is truly going to get opened up. But until a day like that arrives, we're not going to hit this true free market, open enterprise type of situation where you and I are discussing ideas like this. It's going to be controlled. The problem is it's just going to be controlled. Dirty money is still going to be out there.
Of course.
It's just going to come in a different form. Now the dirty money is going to come in a different form. If you truly want to get rid of the dirty money, you open it all up. And then you just say, look, you get paid based off the value that you bring to the university.
Yeah, and if the alums chip in a lot of money, then it goes to that. Whatever, they're allowed to earmark it. And that's the point you make, I think, is interesting, because I would even go a bit further than that. I can see a situation where the Notre Dames of the world, right? The independents, who basically Notre Dame sort of decides to join this conference for one sport, another conference for another sport, and definitely not a conference for this sport. I could see more teams going that route. They're like, wait a minute. If you were in Ohio State, for example, that more than $120 million athletic budget every year, you even need the conference?
No.
You're just your own island again. You're like, I don't even need to be in this conference anymore.
I don't know why any of these Power Five schools would say they need the NCAA. Yeah, and specifically in other sports that are not football, NCAA plays a big role. Like basketball, of course, we all know what March Madness is. But when you're talking about postseason football, what the heck does NCAA have to do with postseason or college football?
Bowls are their own deal. Nothing. It's just the playoffs, just at the very tail end of it.
And so it might not
be
the
same. By
the
way, this is coming for basketball, too.
Right.
This is not football-only ruling. This is college athletics ruling.
So maybe it's not the same for every sport. Maybe, University of Florida breaks off in football, but they stay in NCAA for everything else. I don't know. I'm not smart enough to figure this all out, but I do know this. I'm good friends with Jeremy Bloom. I played with Jeremy Bloom. Jeremy was like the poster boy for...
Yes, he was.
He was the original guy that really just got hosed over by the NCAA. He could not go get the endorsements that not only was going to make him a rich man, and they did, but were required to train at the level that he needed to train for the Olympics. He wasn't able to take those endorsements because of the NCAA if he wanted to keep his eligibility in football. He ends up having to give up his eligibility in football. I know that chaps him. I know that to this day, he's still got a lot of questions, a lot of what ifs of what could have happened in his college football career. And he really regrets the fact that he didn't get to play. That's an extreme example of a two-sport guy, but it's a good example of what a lot of kids have had to give up and decisions that they've had to make. And, you know, like Johnny Manziel, when we heard last week that he was getting paid to sign autographs, go into some shady apartment, getting paid like 10 cents per autograph, was I shocked to hear that Johnny Manziel took money? No, of course not. Do I think he's a bad guy for taking money? No, I don't. I mean, I think that's his name that he should have been able to benefit from. And quite frankly, I doubt if even he was taking the type of money that was going to be life-changing type of money, right? And now you've got the ability, or at least you should have the ability to say, hey, if my name is worth something, I've got the ability to go sell my name just like I could if I was an 18-year-old kid that was a computer whiz that I could go sell myself to Google.
Sure. Because you can do both at the same time there.
Right.
If you have that ability, that's true. And the upper limit of it, though, is interesting to me. Because I immediately go to Trevor Lawrence over the last couple of years for Clemson, right? Was he worth $10 million a year to that university?
Easily. Without a question, he was. First off, I mean, what is Dabo Sweeney getting paid?
Can you imagine somebody like Trevor Lawrence, by the time his senior season rolls around, he's like, you know what, I'd actually like $10 million. Or I'll enter the transfer portal. Mm. I mean, could we be entering that era?
Well, that's why I think you probably the right thing to do is probably not to pay a salary to these kids, because I do think that gets complicated. And then that truly is going to, I mean, all smaller schools, it would just be over for them. If you can pay an open-ended salary to the kids, it's over. But I do think that just giving the kids the right to sell their own name, say, Trevor, you want to go out and you want to get a sponsorship from Nike, no problem. That's not necessarily coming from Clemson.
Right.
Clemson's giving you $50,000 a year that is the same that the other kids are getting. But, yeah, you do have the ability to go sell your name elsewhere.
That's next on the list with the names and image and likeness. And it is fascinating because the lead counsel on that particular case weighed in specifically about this one and said, in light of Justice Kavanaugh's comments, we're thinking whether we should once again challenge pay for play. That's Steve Berman, the lead attorney in the other case for the name, images, and license. Kavanaugh is suggesting you should go after everything, end quote. And
meaning what?
Meaning, basically, players should be able to make whatever they want. There's no limits on anything.
Yeah.
Name, image, and likeness is anything. You should be able to go to the schools and say, I would like this, or I'll transfer, or I would like that, and I'll transfer. There really isn't going to be a limit, because like you said, it transforms these universities into straight-up businesses.
Yeah, it does. And it definitely
And that means you're going to see that kind of performance as well.
It does. Yeah. I mean, it gets complicated, because then you say, all right, well, you're recruiting a backup right tackle, and I'll use myself for an example. You know, I ended up with a lot of offers. I could have gone to probably 20, 25 schools, but the majority of them were kind of mid-tier schools, and then I had a handful of upper echelon type of offers, right? And I would look at those situations, and I would say, okay, well, I could have gone to schools that were better at football than University of Colorado. I chose CU for a number of reasons. I wanted to be here at home. I wanted to play in front of family, but opportunity was a part of it. I felt like I was going to have a good opportunity to excel there. Whereas if I went to Notre Dame or Oregon or some of these other schools that had offered me, I felt like, man, I might just get caught up in the system and never play. But if those schools would have paid me more money,
right,
I probably would have gone, right?
I mean, that's the question. Would you pass up? Everyone has a price. I mean, there's going to be a stage where you would pass up the opportunity, which I think most players are probably thinking just like you do out of high school, like, where can I go where I can become a starter?
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully you have the self-awareness, or you have people giving you good advice to understand, look, not everyone's going to go start at Alabama. You have to find where you fit and find the right spot. But that could get all changed up with dollar figures going in there now.
Sure.
I mean, there could easily be a number, depending on your family situation. You're like, you know what? Probably not going to get to start here, but I could use that money. I think I'll just take that money.
Well, a good first start for college athletes is to get unionized. And if you do that, you can collectively bargain.
That does feel like that's the next step, right?
Yeah, right. I mean, that feels like what the natural step should be, in which now you can negotiate some sort of equal ground in which everybody is getting paid something similar, right? And hopefully that keeps the ground level enough that the smaller schools don't just totally get tossed out with the bathwater.
Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut had a this of the ruling, I think, which really sums it up very well, said, today's Supreme Court ruling highlights just how much the tide is turning against the NCAA and its unfair treatment of college athletes. The status quo on amateurism is finally changing, and the NCAA no longer has carte blanche to control athletes' livelihoods and monopolize the market. This is the kind of justice and basic rights college athletes deserve. As a former one, how does that sit with you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is an absolute no-brainer. It's time for kids to be able to get paid. I'm not smart enough to know the right way to get them paid. But, yeah, the words and the verbiage that are used there is right. You know, there are people out there that are not ready for this, for sure. And here's a good example of somebody on the text line. They say, no, there's no way that a college kid should be able to make $50,000 a year and get a free education. Really? I mean, that's fine. And you're more than entitled to your opinion. And I know that you're not alone in your opinion.
Right.
But I'll tell you this, are there not students out there that are on an academic scholarship right now that because they got a 4.0 or better in high school and now they get a free ride in college and they are out there capitalizing because they are smart enough to go create a business. Smart enough to go create Facebook, whatever. And they go out and they are making hundreds of thousands of dollars while they are earning a college education. Yeah, of course there are. So to say that no student athlete should be able to pay that, well, hold on. I mean, if you could provide the type of value that is worthy of a $50,000 job,
yes,
then of course you should
and
be able to get paid.
That's the difference.
That.
You talk, if you're going to dive into the world of free market economics, well, it's very simple. You are worth what the market believes you are worth.
That's right.
That's in any job, in any situation, anything that any role in the United States at all. If you're going to get a job, you're going to push for the job that will get you the money you believe you're worth, and you want to find a place that will pay it. Maybe you won't, and maybe you aim too high. But eventually, you're going to settle in a spot where if somebody believes that you're worth $100,000 a year, then you are.
But here's where
that's
it gets
how
really
it works.
Ugly. But here's where that's a dangerous thought. I agree with it in principle. But okay, now what happens after your freshman year when you're making $50,000 a year and all of a sudden, Oregon calls you up and they're like, nope, we actually think you're worth 150.
Right.
Come on over here, buddy.
Yep. That's what I was suggesting. The quarterbacks, if you were Trevor Lawrence, you could have said, I want $10 million.
Yeah. You know
and
what?
If you don't pay it, I'll transfer to
some
other school.
And that sounds scary, and that sounds like it's going to be
possible.
Absolute anarchy.
Yeah.
But you know what? It won't be, because what happens in the real world? Like my job, for example, I signed a contract that I'm committed to 104.3 The Fan.
Right.
And if I want to leave 104.3 The Fan, yes, in theory, I could do that. But guess what?
But there are
ramifications
for that. Right. Exactly.
And I would have to sit out. And if in theory, I had a job in which you got paid a $100,000 signing bonus because they wanted you that much. Well, guess what would happen if you left that job too early? You would have to pay that money back. So you really just start treating it like any other business,
right,
and all of a sudden it's no longer dirty money.
It will be contracts, like you get in the NFL. It will simply be contracts. They'll offer it.
And then you look at it like, okay, wow, now what about minor league baseball? Well, now what about some of these other sports that
right,
there really are minor leagues? Do those go away? Seriously, what happens at that point? If you do turn these colleges into an operating business,
oh, here's the other place that I was just thinking about. Think about this. Maybe one and done and all these sort of things go away. Because, see, if I'm let's stick with the Trevor Lawrence. If I'm Clemson and I'm recruiting Trevor Lawrence out of high school, and I know I'll pay him, but I'm telling him, I want you for 4 years. I want you to sign that deal for 4 years. You'll get the money, but it's 4 years.
Yeah.
because we want to maximize your value at Clemson.
So
we'll pay you, but you have to stay and fill this all out.
Well, specifically if you get a signing bonus,
right?
So if you get money up front that you've already taken that you haven't earned yet, then absolutely.
You don't have to go pro because guess what? You're basically pro now. You're just not in the NFL.
Right.
And that's really what we're discussing.
So you got your first year job as you're working your way towards the big boy job.
Yeah. That's a very fascinating turn of events here. It's definitely going to change things. You won't see it immediately, but I can tell you already, around the NCAA, there were some conferences today. Somebody got the emergency Zoom meetings.
Oh, yeah.
All over the country today. So it's the ball is rolling. It is. And so it's time for Mount Palumbus Speak, which means you got to get your questions in. You can do that. RamosLaw.com hotline is 303-713-1043. Send them in right now because Mount Palumbus Speak is next.